Jordan, so near banks I stand, and cast a wishful eye.
Hi, this is Jay Webb of International Gospel Hour. Since 1934, Churches of Christ have proclaimed God's Word through International Gospel Hour. Please stay tuned for another lesson on this program by Jody Apple. Are you listening?
For the promised land.
Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 1 of week number 23, studying Matthew chapter 23. As we get started, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. There you will find links to audio and video files, print materials, ebooks, reading schedules, links to all of these IGH 260 broadcasts, links to our Bible study courses. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to IGH.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call toll-free 1-855-IGH-6988 for a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. One last free resource for you to study, something that we just recently posted to our website. On July 2, 1893, John William McGarvey delivered a unique sermon on baptism. The premise, in McGarvey's own words, "Imagine that we have never heard the word baptism." That sounds like an impossible task, but McGarvey, starting in Matthew's Gospel, briefly scanned the first two chapters and then slowed down when he reached Matthew 3, where the word baptism appears for the first time. As McGarvey worked his way through the New Testament, imagining that neither he nor his audience had ever encountered the word baptism before, he said, quote, "Why, there is a word I never saw before. I never heard of it. I wonder what it means that these people were baptized by that man in the River Jordan. I would like to know what it means, but I believe I will let the New Testament itself explain it to me if it will." End of citation by McGarvey. And so it went. Every time that McGarvey found the word baptism, he would let the New Testament explain itself. If you have never heard what the Bible teaches about baptism, you need to read and or listen to McGarvey's lesson. Even if you have heard about baptism all of your life, even if you have your mind made up, and even if you are convinced that you know everything that the Bible teaches about the subject, you still need to read and or hear McGarvey's lesson. To read or hear McGarvey's sermon on baptism that we are calling "Imagine That We Have Never Heard the Word Baptism," go to our free page at internationalgospelhour.com. You can go there directly, internationalgospelhour.com/free. You will see an old-style photograph of John William McGarvey. Click that link, and it will take you where you need to go. You will also find this material linked at the top of our Facebook page that we will mention in just a moment. And then finally, we encourage you to join the thousands who keep up with International Gospel Hour and visit facebook.com/International Gospel Hour. Remember, the audio and print links to the McGarvey sermon, "Imagine That We Have Never Heard the Word Baptism," are at the top of that Facebook page. And we also encourage you to visit twitter.com/JodyApple. Let's get started in our study of Matthew chapter 23. Let's preview the two ways that we summarize each new chapter that we study. First, we summarize the key words that we find in the chapter. And then second, we summarize, or we outline, the key thoughts presented within the chapter. The first summary will give us an idea of some of the general teachings that we will encounter as we read, think, and study our way through the biblical text. The second summary will provide more detail than our brief word study, but nowhere near what we will find as we later engage in a verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study of Matthew chapter 23. We start that verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study after we conclude these two summaries. Here's what we learn from the key word studies of Matthew chapter 23. Though it's not a major earth-shattering change, there's certainly a shake-up of sorts in the word frequencies that we find in Matthew 23. The top three most frequently occurring terms that we have observed in the last few chapters of Matthew are no longer the top three here. Those three original terms are still near the top, but not in the same order. And the most frequently occurring word of greater significance, the term translated as to say, speak, tell, rather than being in the top four or five most frequently appearing terms, drops down to 11th place. And the term for you, though often of some significance in our prior chapter word studies, it's the most frequently occurring term of greater significance here in this chapter. It's in third place overall. The top two spots, as before, are the words translated as the, who, which, and, also, even, and yet, but. Those two, appearing 108 and 50 times respectively, are followed by the word you. More about that in a moment. And then in fourth place, the word for he, she, it, self, same, they, and so forth. The first, second, and fourth place terms, those common helping words, as we have called them, account for 178 occurrences in the chapter. There are 210 different forms of the total 656 words in the original text. The top three of the four common helping words account for just a little more than 27% of the total occurrences. But it's that you term, in third place, that's the most frequently occurring term of significance that reigns in this chapter. Why? Though commentators often break down Matthew's narrative into five major discourses or sermons, this one, though not usually included in that general outline, still stands out. Why is that the case? For one, it's far and away the most personal and most extended one-way confrontation between Jesus and his adversaries. Let's think about that some more. First, it's personal, very personal. Jesus either refers to or appears to directly address the scribes and the Pharisees repeatedly in this chapter. The scribes and Pharisees are mentioned as a pair three times before in Matthew's gospel. In Matthew 5:20, Jesus said, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." In Matthew 12:38, the scribes and Pharisees came to Jesus saying, "We want to see a sign from you." And then, in Matthew 15:1, they came to challenge Jesus concerning his disciples' transgression of the tradition of the elders. But in this text, this chapter, those two are paired together seven times. In verse 13, 14, 15, verse 23, 25, 27, and 29. As Jesus speaks to and or about them, he frequently uses the pronoun you. The term you appears 29 times in the chapter. In the earlier part of Matthew 23, it refers to Jesus' general audience, the multitudes, and the disciples. The scribes and Pharisees will tell you what to do. Don't you be called rabbi or teacher or father. That accounts for most of the you occurrences through verse 12 of the chapter. But starting with verse 13, the term you applied to the Pharisees and the scribes. Jesus repeatedly said to them, "Woe to you." And Jesus talked about what they did, about what they taught, or what they bound on others as what you do. Additionally, it's very personal in that Jesus used the word woe at least 7 times in the chapter. Jesus used that interjection or exclamation in order to capture and to keep their attention. Jesus also used the word hypocrite 6 times, and all 6 times it was used as part of the phrase, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. There may be other key features that make Jesus' address here personal, but these should be enough to establish our earlier assessment. Second, it was an extended discourse. Jesus, of course, was challenged repeatedly by the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the lawyers, the scribes, and others throughout his ministry. And on occasion, there were times when 2 of these groups came together to test Jesus. But though the discussions were long in the context where those encounters are recorded, this entire chapter was devoted to Jesus' rebuke of their beliefs and their practices. Third, it was a very one-way confrontation. In the other accounts where Jesus was challenged, we witness some give and take. An opponent would raise a question, an issue, make a pointed remark or an accusation about something that they saw Jesus or the disciples do, or about something that they failed to do. Jesus would answer their question. They might ask another question, make another comment. But overall, those confrontations were two-way exchanges. Both Jesus and his adversaries were engaged. Not so here. You do not need a red-letter Bible to see this, but if you do have one, a quick glance shows you that, other than the first verse and the first word in the second verse, the rest of the chapter, it's all Jesus' words. There's no overt or underhanded challenges by any opponent. There's no response by Jesus to a question or a test or some alleged conundrum. There's no give and take that we observe in the course of the typical Jesus-adversary dialogue. It's all Jesus. It's all Jesus introducing the errors of the scribes and the Pharisees. It's all Jesus denouncing the errors of the scribes and the Pharisees. It's all Jesus pronouncing judgment on the scribes and on the Pharisees because of their errors. It's just all Jesus. Let's look at some of the other key terms that appear in the chapter. The word translated as the pronouns he, she, it, self, they, and others appears 20 times in Matthew 23. Though seemingly innocent, perhaps even innocuous, those pronouns help us to identify not just people, for example, his disciples, meaning Jesus' disciples, or her children, referring to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, but they also help us to identify key ideas, places, and things that were connected to the scribes' and the Pharisees' teachings and customs. It's repeatedly applied to their works, chapter 23, verse 3 and verse 5, for example, in order to distinguish what they did from what God desired and what God expected them to do. Jesus used the term to apply to their fingers and their phylacteries and their garments to make sure that Jesus' audience realized that what was theirs was not necessarily or at all God's. Simple, yet effective. We do that sort of thing all the time in everyday language. If we disagree with someone about some matter of importance, we may seriously or mockingly or sarcastically point out that your idea, dripping with as much cynical tone as possible, your idea definitely flies in the face of my idea. Every time we refer to your whatever in conversation, it's obvious that it doesn't square with what we think. Though we obviously do not hear tone in Jesus' speech, the use of these pronouns in this setting makes it clear that what identified the scribes' and the Pharisees' beliefs and practices was not at all what God wanted. The word translated as in, with, by, to also appears 20 times in the chapter. Again, as we have seen in prior chapters, that seems to be a very simple and a very insignificant term. Depending on context and its use in that context, it's often nothing more than a marker of some kind. Bauer notes 12 different ways that it can serve as a marker. The point, the 20 instances of this term in Matthew 23 often tells us where, either physically or spiritually, the scribes and the Pharisees were. They were in the best of places and desirous for recognition at feasts, in the synagogues, in the marketplaces. Their beliefs led them to swear by the temple, or by the gold, or by the altar, all indicating not just their physical actions, but their motivation, or their supposed spiritual reasons for those actions. There's a sense in which we see, we realize, where the scribes and the Pharisees are by studying these words. The word for but, now, and appears 17 times in the chapter. As in previous chapters and contexts, the term often functions as nothing more significant than a connecting word. But, as we have seen, especially in the context of Jesus' dialogues with his rivals, it was often used correctively. As such, it was used to indicate contrast and differences. For example, in Matthew 23, verse 3, Jesus said, "Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do." It was all right to do what the scribes and the Pharisees tell you to do, assuming, of course, that what they said was approved of God. But, there's our word, but do not follow their works. Well, why not? Because what they say and what they do not only do not sync with each other in their own lives, they do not sync with God's will and God's word. Read through the chapter quickly, and you will see that Jesus uses the term to call attention to their incorrect views. Why do they do what they do? They do it to be seen. Why do they like titles? They want to be recognized and honored. Why are they not the greatest? Because they want to be served rather than to serve. Why do they exalt themselves? Because they do not understand humility. Why do they swear and make oaths by supposedly greater things? Because they want to do great things to prove their own worth. This chapter highlights those contrasts many times as Jesus enlightened the multitudes and his disciples about how far removed the scribes and the Pharisees were from God. The word translated as to be or exist appears 12 times in the chapter. As before, it indicates a state of being, either where someone was or where someone was supposed to be, not just physically, but also spiritually. In one section of this chapter, Jesus pointed out what was right from God's perspective. One is your teacher. You are all brethren. One is your father. You shall be servants. These statements reflected a state of being, a reality that God wanted and that God respected. But as the chapter progresses, the same terms were used to show a different state of being, a different reality that indicated where the scribes and where the Pharisees were. They were full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. They were witnesses against themselves. It's obvious that their reality did not square with God's. As always, there are more key words to think about than time to address them. We close this section with a whirlwind tour of some of the other terms that will stand out as we wind our way through Matthew 23. Terms translated as swear show up 10 times. All of them appear against the backdrop of the unique practices that the scribes and the Pharisees observed relative to their hierarchy of oaths. Not surprisingly, the word for scribe appears 8 times. The word translated as to say, speak, tell also appears 8 times. In other chapters, it appears more frequently. But when you are in the midst of a chapter where Jesus speaks almost continuously, you do not have to be constantly reminded that he's doing so. The word translated as that, because, since, why, will be found 8 times in the chapter, usually as Jesus explains the reasoning why a specific woe was pronounced against the scribes and the Pharisees. Consistent with the number of times that the word scribe appears, the term for Pharisee, always in tandem with that former term, also appears 8 times. The word for woe, a term of warning and judgment, appears at least 7 times, and, depending on the translation, 8 times. The designation for work appears 7 times, usually with reference to what the Pharisees say that you should do, or with reference to what Jesus said that they did not do. Other key terms in the text, the word hypocrite appears 6 times, the word temple 5 times, the word prophet 5 times, the word blind, always used here as an indictment of the spiritual condition of the scribes and the Pharisees, it appears 5 times. The word blood or bloodshed, always a reference to guilt on the part of the scribes and the Pharisees or their ancestors, it appears 4 times. And we end with this word, the term for altar, mentioned in the context of the hierarchy of oaths referenced earlier. It also appears 4 times. Let's begin our overview of Matthew 23. In Matthew 23, verses 1 through 12, Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, the central topic, the scribes and the Pharisees. In Matthew 23, verse 1, Jesus' audience, the multitudes, and the disciples. In verses 2 through 12, what the scribes and the Pharisees do. Verse 2, they sit in Moses' seat. Verse 3, they tell you what to do. Continuing in verse 3, you are to do what they tell you to do, but not to do what they do. Why? Because they say and they do not do. In verse 4, they bind heavy burdens on others. These burdens are hard to bear. They place them on men's shoulders, but they do not lift one finger to move those burdens themselves. In verse 5, what they do to be seen by men. They broaden their phylacteries. They enlarge the borders of their garments. In verse 6, they love the best places, at feasts and in the synagogues. In verse 7, they want to be recognized in the marketplaces and when men call them rabbi. In chapter 23, verses 8 through 12, Jesus cautions against undue recognition. Verse 8, do not be called rabbi. You have but one teacher, that teacher, the Christ. You are all brethren. In verse 9, do not call anyone father on earth. You have one father in heaven. Verse 10, do not be called teacher. You have one teacher, the Christ. In verse 11 and 12, greatness and servanthood. In verse 11, to be the greatest, be a servant. In verse 12, 2 choices. Exaltation first, humbled second, or humbled first, exalted second. In chapter 23, verses 13 through 15, we read the first woes. Jesus addresses the scribes and the Pharisees directly. Jesus calls them hypocrites. Verse 13, woe to you. You are hypocrites. You close the kingdom of heaven for men. You do not enter yourselves, and you do not allow others to enter. In verse 14, woe to you. You are hypocrites. You take advantage of widows. You make long, pretentious prayers. You will receive greater condemnation. In verse 15, woe to you. You are hypocrites. You make great efforts to convert others, but your converts are just as lost as you are. In chapter 23, verses 16 through 22, the second set of woes. Jesus continues to address the scribes and the Pharisees. Jesus criticizes their oaths. Verse 16, woe to you. You are blind guides. You rank oaths. Swearing by the temple is nothing. Swearing by the gold in the temple, that's something. Verse 17, you are fools and blind. Which is greater, the gold or the temple? Verse 18, swearing by the altar. Swearing by the altar is nothing. But swearing by the gift of the altar, that's something. Verse 19, you are fools and blind. Which is greater, the gift or the altar? Chapter 23, verses 20 through 22, the principles of oaths. Verse 20, swearing by the altar. When you swear by the altar, you swear by all things on the altar. Verse 21, when you swear by the temple, he who swears by the temple swears by him who dwells there. And verse 22, swearing by heaven, you swear by the throne means that you swear by him who sits on that throne. In chapter 23, verses 23 through 24, the next set of woes. Jesus again speaking to the scribes and the Pharisees, you major in minors and you minor in majors. Verse 23, woe to you, you are hypocrites. You tithe of the smallest of spices, but you neglect the weightier matters of the law. You miss justice. You miss mercy. You miss faith. You should do these as well as the others. In verse 24, you are blind guides. You strain out a gnat and you swallow a camel. In chapter 23, verses 25 and 26, the fourth woes. Jesus, continuing to speak to the scribes and the Pharisees, says, you emphasize the outside and you forget the inside. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 23. This reminder as we conclude, to start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com.
God be with you till we meet again.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast today. We hope, first, that it glorified God, but second, we hope that it edified you. Listen to it again if you need to, or to other lessons in the series by going to the Media tab at our site at internationalgospelhour.com.
God be with you.